Footsteps out in the hallway warned Christy of someone's approach. She was dressed now and stood so she would be ready. She wasn't going to the MRI room today without a fight. She trusted that Director Autry would have given orders that she wouldn't be harmed. Even though she didn't know the reason, she knew that she was important to him. He would keep her alive. An indistinct face appeared on the other side of the door's view panel.
Hello?
Christy didn't respond.
Miss, I'm coming in. The director told me to check on you. I hope you're awake.
The lock turned and the door opened. Bastian stood in his red uniform in the doorway. 4 sec guards stood behind him. Christy knew she couldn't make it past them, but the inclination to try, to assert herself and not be a victim, burned strongly within her. Bastian held up his hands.
Miss, I asked not to take any action. These sec guards won't kill you, but the director will allow them to restrain you. This room might not seem like much to you, but your circumstances can be made worse.
Christy was prepared to test that.
Please.
His pleading touched her, but her thoughts were more of Ryan and the others. If they managed to reach Heidecker Labs and somehow get inside, they would need her hale and whole.
Gaia, grant me patience. All right, I'm fine. What else did you need?
Only to check on you.
The boy turned to go.
Bastian, is the director going to test me some more?
He turned back to face her.
Not this morning. This afternoon. He was exhausted from yesterday and did not sleep well last night. Dread Howard fights him on every front.
Christy warmed a little toward the squid. The enemy of her enemy was her friend. Right now, Director Autry was her greatest threat. Dread Howard was trapped.
Who is Ragnar Olsen?
I don't know.
You've never heard the name?
No.
All right. What about Jennifer Tolbert?
Bastian froze, and his eyes widened in panic.
Where did you hear that name?
So you have heard of her?
Bastian licked his lips and paused. Then he turned to the sec guards.
Wait in the hallway. I'm going to talk to her alone.
The guards backed out of the doorway. Bastian closed the door and took a small device from his pocket. He waved it in front of the door panel.
We can talk alone. The room is now soundproof. They cannot hear us.
Is Jennifer Tolbert a secret?
Is Dread Howard listening?
Christy searched for the squid's thoughts among her own, but she found no trace of him. But she wasn't convinced that he wasn't there on some level.
No.
Bastian looked a little relieved.
Maybe the director's efforts have tired him out. Maybe the director's efforts have tired him as well.
Tell me about Jennifer Tolbert.
How do you know about her?
I found her in Dread Howard's thoughts last night.
You can enter his mind?
I can sense things sometimes. I think he was trying to hide Jennifer Tolbert.
Perhaps.
Who is she?
She's dead. I don't see how she can matter.
All right. Who was she?
I'm not supposed to say.
Christy wanted to take the boy and shake the truth from him, but she knew that would only turn him against her. Right now, he at least felt sympathy toward her.
Bastian, I'm trapped here. I don't know why. I don't know what the director plans to do with me. My friends are on their way here to attempt to help me.
They are?
Yes. Dread Howard knows. He's found a way to lead them here using me as bait.
Why would he do that?
He wants them to help him escape this place.
Will they kill the director?
If the director tries to stop them.
Bastian shook his head.
Director Autry will fight to prevent them, but they're not going to be strong enough to defeat the director. He has too many sec guards and defenses. They'll be killed.
My friends have faced a lot of enemies and they're still alive. They haven't let much stop them before.
You think they can get you out of here?
If it can be done.
All right. If they do, will you take me with you? I never wanted to be here. I was brought in by slavers who delivered children to the director. Some of them are trained by sec guards. Others are used in experiments and are fed to the creatures in the vault. Only my ability to read and write saved me.
The boy's fear showed in his eyes and the way his hands trembled.
I only want to live.
So do I. Maybe we stand a better chance working together. Tell me about Jennifer Tolbert.
She was a white coat here. She was at Heidecker Labs before the nuke cost. During Skydark, she stayed down in the redoubt until the rad levels dropped. Her experimentation is what created Dread Howard.
She created him?
Yes. Jennifer Tolbert was a biologist who did genetic editing. She was in charge of the project to enhance the intelligence of cephalopods for military application. I'm not sure what it all means. I read it in some old journals while researching for Director Autry, but she was supposed to make squids fight smarter for Barons before Skydark. Dread Howard was the first of what was supposed to be an army. Turned out to be the only one.
What happened to Tolbert?
She got old, and she died. She spent her whole life trying to understand what Dread Howard was and how he can do what he does. She never solved the riddle.
If Tolbert created him, why wouldn't she know what he was?
He was kept in an aquarium down in the vault. In this place.
Bastion waved an arm to indicate everything around them.
The vault was supposed to be shielded against the rad blasts. They only found out later that Dread Howard got soaked in rad from the bombs. She didn't know how much or for how long, but it changed him more than she could account for. Squid only lived for a while. Dread Howard is over 100 years old. Director Autry thinks he might never die.
Why does Director Autry have pictures of Tolbert in his room?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Have you seen the director's room? The one where the piano is?
When did you see that?
Last night, while I was sleeping. Why does he have those pictures?
I don't know. He never said. You're saying those pictures are of Jennifer Tolbert?
They are. Have you never seen her?
Never. I only read reports that were in the journals Director Autry keeps.
Was Tolbert part of the director's family? Or a mentor? He looks old enough that she could have trained him.
I don't know. He never talks about her.
Christie's mind spun from everything she knew, yet didn't know, and the fact that time was working against her and Ryan and the companions. Even if Ryan and the others got to Heidecker Labs, they might be too late to save her from whatever the director had planned. Or Dread Howard. All of them were on a collision course with destruction.
All right. Tell me what the director wants with me.
You talk to Dread Howard, miss. Hasn't he told you?
No.
Miss, Director Autry has determined that your mind, your psi abilities, are like none he's ever seen before.
Christie suspected that had to do with her mutie genes.
What difference does that make?
Miss, the director believes the connection you have to Dread Howard will allow him to have his mind transferred into your body.
He can't do that. No one can do that.
Even as Christie denied the possibility, the chance that Bastion's words were true overwhelmed her. Her knees threatened to buckle.
He believes he can. According to the files I've seen, Dread Howard has done such a thing one time before. Successfully.
What happened when he was unsuccessful?
The folks he did it to died. Or they went mad.
Christie tried to absorb that. At the same time, she rejected it.
What will happen to me if he is successful? Will I be in the director's body?
Bastion shook his head.
No, miss. You'll just be gone.
Christie tried to comprehend that.
You wouldn't want his body anyway. I believe the director is dying. That's why he's so desperate to force Dread Howard to do this.
The companions walked north and followed the lakeshore. They stayed back far enough in the woods they couldn't be easily seen by crews on the ships or boats that plied the water. The trade at Bobo's had gone well. GB had spent a few hours repairing weapons, and they'd gotten clothing for the woman and her children, barbecue pork and duck, and a few boxes of ammo for their weapons. They'd left Martha and her children an hour back, at a trail the woman said would take her to the village where she hoped someone would take her in. Ryan had watched them go and wondered if they would survive the trip or be accepted by the people who lived in the village. In the end, he'd let the questions go. The woman and her children weren't his problem. They'd met on the road and had been able to help each other for a few miles along the way. Ryan had saved them, and the girl had provided more insight into what they faced. Provided Kate's performance had been real and not theater. Early in the afternoon, the day after the companions had left Bobo's, when the shadows around trees were the deepest and the sun was against anyone in Heidecker Labs, Ryan lay prone on a hill among thick brush and surveilled the building. He tracked his binoculars over the sec fence that surrounded the structure and the sec guards who patrolled in shifts. JB lay in the brush a short distance from Ryan.
They're heavy on sec.
Yeah. Holding on to this place when you can get attacked from the land and the water could be hard. They have to keep their sec sharp.
Ryan adjusted the binoculars and scanned the upper floors. All the windows were polarized and didn't allow any visibility. The sun, which served Ryan in his camouflage efforts, reflected against the glass and worked against him. The constant surveillance over the last few hours tired his eye. He blinked away the burning sensation and handed the binoculars to JB.
We can't go at them directly, Ace on the line. That would just get us all chilled, and we'd be no good to Christy.
I know.
Ryan rolled over onto his back and tried to relax. It didn't work.
Fire blast.
We'll find another way. Maybe come at them from the water.
Against those anchor chains they've got mounted on pylons?
Chains can be cut or blasted.
There are no doors on that side of the building. We get through the chains, where do we go?
They'd reconned the lake in front of Heidecker Labs on their way around the shore to their present position.
And we could blow a hole in the wall there.
After we get the chains out of the way and avoid those machine guns and mortars they have mounted at the top of that building, we'd get caught before we ever get started.
Black dust.
We need a way in. And the only way to get it is when that building is open and a distraction can be made.
Even if we manage that, getting in doesn't mean we can get out again.
JB automatically played devil's advocate for the moment. That was how he and Ryan had worked on Warwag 1 when things got less than optimal.
Easier to get out of SEC than to get into it, unless you're in lockup. And even that can be done as long as you stay alive. We've done that.
Yeah, we have. Never looked forward to it. Never want to be behind the eight ball.
Ryan's mind spun and tumbled as he sorted through everything he'd seen and heard over the last few days.
We passed Kirchner's 4 miles back.
The Blind Moose, yeah.
Thorne said the slavers who trade children to Heidecker Labs will be there sometime today.
Yeah.
Before they trade those children to Heidecker in the morning, they'll be there celebrating all the goods they're going to get for those children tonight. While they're drinking and chasing gaudies, I'm thinking we could cut out one or two of those slavers from the herd and question them about how the trade with Heidecker is done.
Well, that could give us some insight. Can't have whoever we talk to say anything about us to anybody.
Those men taking children are cold hearts, JB. I won't have a problem making sure they can't say anything to anyone ever again.
Me neither. Just have to figure out what to do with the bodies.
We'll figure it out.
Ryan got to his feet, signaled to Jack 100 yards away, and headed back the way they'd come. Capturing slavers wasn't a plan, but it was hopefully the seed of one. They needed to know more about how Heidecker Labs operated. Nausea swam in Christy's stomach, and she had to clamp her jaws tight to keep from cursing the SEC guards, Director Autry, and Dred Howard.
Christy!
Finally, after being absent nearly all day, Dred Howard was with her again. She was sick that she felt relieved.
I am here. You are not alone.
I know what the Director is going to make you do.
You know what he wants me to do.
You're not going to do it?
Not if my plan works.
What plan?
Wait. You humans are always in a hurry. The constant awareness of time limits you in so many ways.
Not all of us have lived 100 years and have who knows how much longer to live.
100 years spent in a prison and periodically tortured is much longer than you can imagine. Those constraints foster patience.
Christy made herself walk, even though she wanted to throw herself down and make the SEC guards carry her. She would have if it would have slowed the SEC guards in any way, but they would just pick her up and the remnants of her dignity would be gone. If things went badly, if Director Audrey did take over her body and claim it as his own, she trusted that the Earth Mother would channel her back into the world in another way. That was the way her people believed. There was better coming. A person just had to wait for it. She clung to that hope.
If you are going to believe in gods, then you should believe in me.
Christy ignored that, and she wasn't sure if the squid's words held a mocking tone or smug self-satisfaction. Ahead of them, Bastion turned another corner. although many of the passageways through the vault looked the same. Christy was sure she hadn't come this way. She had mapped a lot of them in her dreams. The fear inside her screamed to get out. She kept it throttled with difficulty.
Can you really do what Director Autry thinks you can? Can you replace my mind with his?
Yes. The process is very difficult and can only be done with minds that have strong psi capabilities. You have them.
Have you told Director Autry that?
Yes.
Why?
His machines showed that. I only confirmed what he already knew. It doesn't matter. He is too desperate. His time draws to a close. He needs to act now.
Couldn't you fool him? Tell him the process didn't work?
He would know.
Then you could wipe his mind and leave mine alone. I could pretend I am him.
And if you failed in that act, if his set guards see through your subterfuge, they have orders to kill me. I will not allow myself to die.
You'll sacrifice me to save yourself.
Of course. If we tried your plan and failed, I would die. You would have sacrificed me.
I would die with you.
My plan allows me to live and plan for escape another day. I am going to do what I have to in order to survive.
Christy pulled at her handcuffs, but they didn't move and only bit into her flesh.
Be calm. I have a plan.
What if it doesn't work?
Bastion pressed his device against a sec panel on a door.
Then I will wait until I am able to find another chance to get free.
What about me?
Your Earth Mother will take care of you.
Christy followed Bastion into a room that held a single chair in the center. Like the room with the MRI device, this chamber shared a wall with Dread Howard. Beyond the transparent wall, the giant squid floated in the water. His arms and tentacles moved gently around him. A large metal hood with a plexiglass faceplate hung over the chair. Several cables wound around a mechanical arm and disappeared into a junction box. Christy fought against the sec guards, but her struggles were wasted and resulted in exhaustion. The sec guards shoved Christy into the chair and strapped her wrists and ankles in place with leather straps. Director Autry stood to one side in front of a control panel that featured numerous switches and dials. He wore a surgeon's green smock and pants. Behind his glasses, his eyes glittered with excitement.
You are a beautiful woman. You would be even more beautiful if you would simply make an effort.
Christy stilled a red-hot curse before it could escape. She wouldn't give him the satisfaction of seeing her distraught. She bottled up her fear and kept her face expressionless. At least Ryan wouldn't have to see this happen. He wouldn't witness her erasure. If things went badly, she only hoped he would find out he was too late and be able to save himself and their friends. The director walked to Christy and brushed her hair from her face with his fingertips. Immediately, her hair curled and drew back from his touch.
That's interesting. I hadn't noticed that before. Are you doing that? Or is it merely some reflex?
I know about Jennifer Tolbert.
Christy wanted to see what that would do to the old man's confidence. Not all of his secrets were hidden anymore. Director Autry recoiled, like he'd just gotten a face full of acid.
How did you find out about her? Did Dread Howard tell you?
Christy masked the fear that vibrated inside her and wound so tightly she feared she would shatter if it sprang free.
You haven't beaten me yet, you shriveled up whore son. And you won't either. I'm stronger than you are.
Perhaps you might be stronger than me, but you're not stronger than me and Dread Howard.
He pointed to the floating squid in the next room.
I am not alone. Dread Howard has a vested interest in my success.
So he can continue to be a slave?
Trust me, Dread Howard will prefer life as a slave over death. He's had over 100 years to learn to love being alive.
He reached for her hair again and smiled in satisfaction when it drew back from his hand.
Having that is going to be delightful. I hope that trait still manifests after the transfer process.
The transfer is not going to happen.
Oh, but it is. It may take a while, but today I am patient. Dread Howard and I will wear you down, and when you can fight no more, I will have what I desire. Dread Howard has promised.
The old man flipped a switch, and the hood descended to cover Christie's head. She peered through the plexiglass, and weird, colorful images juiced across the material. An electric current shot through her body.
Leave this.
Dread Howard flicked one of his tentacles.
Come with me, and he can't hurt you.
Christie immediately thought the squid was lying to her and trying to get her to lower her defenses.
Trust me. Leave the pain behind. Come with me, and we will find the Viking.
Another electrical jolt shot through Christie. This time, against her will and by choice at the same time, her mind fled the room. She followed Dread Howard through a twisting spiral filled with impossible colors and shapes. When Christie could see again, she looked out at a lake from the deck of a sleek motor sailor. It took her only a moment to recognize the huge body of water as Great Huron. Bright afternoon sunlight lit the waves. Wind pulled at her hair and her beard.
Beard?
On either side of the motor sailor, 10 other boats with hard-looking men and women on board roared across the waves as well. Weapons covered them, and they were a lot of leather, motorcycle jackets from before the new cost, and hide jackets that were handmade. All of them featured an embroidered red patch of a black one-eyed raven with an open beak and widespread wings.
Hersir?
Her head turned, and she stared at a man she didn't know.
Hersir.
Ragnar Olsen looked at Fruta, his second son, the only one he had left after Peter Skredsvig had murdered Gorm, his eldest son, in an ambush almost 2 years ago. Olsen had sent Gorm and a small band to find Skredsvig, kill him, and bring back the woman he had coveted and kept to himself behind his chieftain's back. Olsen carried matched 9mm pistols in shoulder holsters, but once a battle got in close, once he could step from his bow to that of an opponent, he favored his war axe. He joyed in the raw impact of the blade cleaving flesh and the horror written into the faces of his enemies as they witnessed the deaths of their comrades.
What do you want, Freyd?
Well, you're falling asleep. You should go down and get proper rest. You've been driving yourself relentlessly.
It was true, Olsen realized. He had been dozing, and he shouldn't have been. A peculiar lethargy had descended on him. For the first time in months, he and the One-Eyed Ravens were once more on Peter Skredsvig's trail, thanks to the stories that had wound up in the Northern Lake area. Olsen had gladly taken up the chase. The traitorous murderer had escaped them for too long.
I swore a blood oath before the gods that I'd seek payback for the death of my son. I won't rest until I've done that. I will continue to drive myself and you, all of you, until that murderer is dead.
Vengeance would soon be Olsen's. The Viking chieftain was certain of that. Skredsvig could not escape for long. They had tracked Skredsvig to this area of Great Huron. Folks here had known his name.
I will stay out here as long as the sun warms me. Keep searching. Skredsvig is out here somewhere. We have sonar. We can track that submersible he commands.
Three of the Viking vessels trailed sonar sensors that were as keen as Heimdall's ears. They had taken them by force from Bobo's trade post when they had found the devices there. After Olsen had learned about the submersible, the Viking chieftain had known he would need an equipment update for his fleet. Bobo's had had a half dozen units in their inventory.
Aye.
And get me another bottle. This one has gone dry.
Olsen sat the empty bottle to one side so it could be collected later. His second son, the one who reminded him daily that his first son was dead, handed Olsen a fresh bottle of mead. The Viking Hersir curled a scarred, calloused hand around the bottle, took a long draw of the fermented honey liquor, and closed his eyes. The sun was warm and the breeze was cool. Those things and the mead helped him relax, helped him to be patient. When he rested his eyes, the dream that was waiting there weaved its magic. and drew him into its embrace. In the dream, Olsen marched up an icy mountain trail. Snow flurries danced around him and blurred the hard, cold world. Olsen carried Gorm, bloody and broken, in his arms, the same way he did when he discovered him, after Skredsveg had killed him.
Ersir, turn and face me.
Instantly angry at the command, at anyone who interrupted him while he tended his son's corpse, Olsen turned and faced the man who had addressed him. An old man stood on the mountain only a few feet away. He was dressed like Olsen in furs and a great cloak. He held a huge spear upright at his side. Two ravens rested on the man's shoulders and rocked in the harsh wind. A black leather patch covered one of the man's eyes. The other eye was fierce and unyielding.
Do you know who I am, Ersir?
Aye.
Excitement and fear thrilled through Olsen. He had never before heard this god speak, but he had longed to hear his voice.
I know who you are. You are Odin, also called High Father, King of the Aesir, father of Thor and Baldur. Your spear is Gungnir, forged by the dwarves to serve you in battle against the Frost Giants.
Good. You do know me.
Aye, you could be no other.
You have come far in your travels.
I hunt a murderer.
Olsen raised his dead son in his arms.
I named my son Gorm, and I taught him to worship you. And he did, even though not everyone embraces the old ways. He was brave and skilled, and he won every battle he ever fought until he was murdered by a coward.
Do you know where your son's murderer is?
He is here, somewhere to the south in Great Huron. I am close to him. I will find him. He can no longer escape me.
Would you allow me to find him for you? To speed you on your way? I don't want to take away from the success of your Emhdar.
The offer surprised Olsen. The one-eyed god was not known for his generosity, though Odin could be charitable.
I would. I have always called on you for the strength to succeed.
Odin pointed to the dark, overcast sky. One of the ravens took wing from his shoulder and disappeared into the whirling snow.
My ravens, Hugh, Moon, bring me news of the world.
Olsen knew that was true. The legends he'd read all mentioned that. One raven was named Thought, and the other was named Memory. A moment later, the bird returned, spread its wings, and once more alighted upon the god's shoulder. It cawed into the one-eyed god's ear. When it finished, Odin smiled coldly and turned his attention to Olsen.
There is a place on the lakeshore. It is called Kirkner's Blind Moose. It is there that you will find the murderer you seek.
Kirchner's Blind Moose was known to Olsen.
Hi, Father. I was there last night. He wasn't there.
Last night was bad timing. If you had stayed, you would have found him. Vengeance for your son could have been yours. The man you seek will be there tonight. Now I have set you on the proper path. If you but follow my words.
I will. And I will burn the murderer's body upon an altar as a sacrifice to you.
The falling snow grew thicker around the Viking Hersir until he lost sight of the mountaintop, his dead son, and the fierce god. Olsen woke on the motor sailor. The chill of the mountain remained within his bones. He gathered his thoughts and wondered if the dream was just a fiction, something knitted by desire and the damning knowledge that he was so close to Gorm's murderer. Then he realized, because the dream had been so strong and so true, it had to be an omen given to him by Odin himself. His life had been full of those. He'd only had to learn to look for them.
Froda!
His second son stood in the motor sailor's stern and kept watch over the lake.
Aye, Herr Tyr.
There is a gaudy house. Call it the Blind Moose.
Aye, we were there last night.
That we were. And we're going there again tonight.
Fruta looked puzzled. He did that a lot more than Gorm ever had. Fruta's confusion came from indecision and disbelief, his weaknesses.
Why?
Because Odin just sent me a vision and showed me where Skredsvig will be tonight.
His son struggled to keep his face neutral and not ask the question that was definitely on his mind. Olsen hated that look. Gorm had never looked at Olsen that way. His oldest son had accepted and believed. When Skredsvig had robbed Gorm of his life, he had destroyed so much of Olsen's planned future.
Set a course for the Blind Moose.
At once, Herr Seer.
Olsen resumed his seat on the motor sailor's deck and visualized the ways he was going to kill Peter Skredsvig. He had no doubts that he would find his son's murderer there. The Highfather had pointed the way. A painful jolt jarred Kristi, but the impact didn't quite rouse her to full wakefulness. Nerve endings quivered and twitched throughout her body. She struggled to center herself as Sonya had taught her all those years ago in Harmonyville. After a moment, her heart rate and breathing slowed. Some of the pain inside her skull settled, but it still felt like it was in pieces, no longer whole.
You are all right. You are still yourself.
Dred Howard's words filled Kristi with fragile hope that was true.
We accomplished what we needed to do. The Viking is in play. I could not have convinced him without your insight into the minds of humans. You provide a touch that I do not have. The Viking, with all of his convictions, was relatively unknown to me. You understood him at his core.
How did you find out about Ragnar Olsen if you didn't know about him?
I found him through Skredsvig. It has taken me 2 days to locate Olsen. That is why I was away from you for so long. Now that I have, he is mine.
What do you mean?
We are in the opening stages of a chess game against the Director. The chessboard is the lake and Heidecker Labs. I am the king. Your mate Ryan is my rook, a strong force capable of many things and possessing few limitations when I bring him into play. Peter Skredsvig is my bishop, limited in some ways because he has a handicap in devotion to his mate. But he is powerful in the endgame. Ragnar Olsen, the Viking, is my knight, and he will strike first to set events into motion, then ride into a position of power when I most need him. You will see.
Kristi understood chess and knew how to play, but she wasn't an expert. Right now, her head felt like it had been filled with wet oatmeal, and she couldn't think clearly.
I don't understand.
You will.
Where does that leave me in your game?
You are my queen, always the most powerful piece on the field of battle. You will see.
What if your game doesn't play out the way you hope it will?
Then all of you will die. And I will play again.
Cold water splashed against Christie's face, and she woke immediately. Water ran up her nose and down her throat. She blinked her eyes open.
Wake up!
Director Autry stepped closer and almost pressed his face against hers. The hood was once more above her.
I will break you.
No, you won't. I will die as myself if it comes to that. I will not be some puppet you can control.
You don't have the power over life and death. I do.
If you push too hard, you will kill her.
Confused, Kristi thought the squid was talking to her, and she didn't understand the warning.
Foul creature, I command you to bend her to my will.
I am trying. She is strong. That's why she is the perfect vessel for you. Even better than the last one. If I alter her too quickly, if I use too much force, I will shatter her mind. Your vessel will be broken, of no further use to you, and your search will have to begin again. Is that what you want? Do you have time for that?
Audrey stood in front of the transparent wall, stared at Dred Howard, and slammed his fist against it.
You are trying to betray me.
No, you are too impatient. Remember what was required last time. The process took time and energy. This time will be even harder because you have been through this before. What remains of you is weaker, more delicate.
Lies!
You need to step back and let me do this. You will destroy...
Good Howard's scream snarled Christie's thoughts, and his pain became hers. In his tank, the squid rolled his arms and tentacles in on himself like a dying spider, trying to cover its vulnerable places. His huge eyes filled with pain and turned opaque. Then his mind reached for hers, caught hold, and pulled her out of the transfer room once again.
Come, I have to recruit my bishop and get him into position. You are running out of time. And if you are you no longer, my plan fails.
Familiar sounds surrounded Christie when she regained consciousness. She opened her eyes and spotted two people, a young woman and a young man, in chairs in front of an array of instruments inside a small, rounded space. Even though she wasn't in the chamber with Director Autry and was doubtless miles away from there and underwater, the pain rattled distinctly in the back of her mind. She had left some of it behind, but some of it had followed her. It grated at her and wore down her defenses. She closed her eyes again and tried to withdraw from the pain.
Concentrate. Be strong. I need you to complete this stage of the plan. Look at where you are. I must convince the bishop to take the field. Otherwise, I will have no pieces in play, and I will be lost.
Focusing was difficult. Agony pounded at Christie's temples. She opened her eyes again. She was in the submersible. She recognized the sounds from the brief time she'd been conscious aboard the vessel. After the submersible's commander, Skredsvig, how the name got into her mind she didn't know and thought it must come from Dread Howard, injected her with the sedative, she'd been rendered unconscious and had only awakened in front of Dread Howard's prison. Skredsvig's reflection shifted in the monitor screen at his side. He was grim, intense, and he was thinking about a woman lying in a hospital bed. His thoughts were naked enough that Christie picked up on them. Or perhaps Dread Howard picked them up and passed them to her. Christie was no longer sure. The woman looked wasted to the bone, like she was already packed and ready to leave on the next train headed west.
Issa.
Peter?
Skredsvig shifted and tried in vain to get comfortable in the mini-sub's command chair as Hyori and Torrance managed the vessel. They were reluctant participants in his hunt for the red-headed woman's friends, but they knew the orders had come from Director Autry. Torrance hunched over the sonar array.
You know this is impossible, right? Finding those people that were traveling with that woman we fished out of the lake?
The director wants them found. You want to go back and tell him the assignment's too hard? That he should send someone else?
Torrance removed his glasses and rubbed his eyes.
Of course not. I'm just wondering why we got tasked with this. We brought back the woman the director was so excited about. We should have gotten some extended downtime, so why did we end up drawing the short straw?
You'll find them.
If they even got off that sinking freighter. That's where we left them, remember? And it was sinking. That wreck probably went down during the storm and took them with it.
Torrance leaned back in his seat.
This is a steaming pile of dreck. We don't even know what they look like.
The director provided descriptions.
A one-eyed guy, another guy in a fedora, which, by the way, I know is a hat, but couldn't identify it if I had to, because I don't know.
The guy with the fedora has glasses. You know what glasses are. You don't see many of those.
Hyori tapped the side of her head.
I was listening.
Great. You win the prize. Then there's the old guy in weird clothes. How am I supposed to even know what would be considered weird?
You're right. You're sartorially challenged. Don't forget the others with those two.
The black woman and the two kids. I know. I was listening too.
One of the kids isn't so young, and he's an albino. Sounds like a group that will stand out wherever they are.
Unless they're at the bottom of the lake, or more squid squads have hauled them off to some undersea grotto to keep as slaves.
I already shot him a narrow-eyed look.
What? Who knows what those things are doing out in the lake? Folks on the shore wear dead ones on their heads and faces that some of them claim are still talking to them. They call out at night and draw men, women, and children into the lake to drown. Don't tell me that slavery in an underground grotto is out of the realm of possibility when Dred Howard is calling so many of the shots in Heidecker Labs.
If the squid had gotten them, we would know.
How?
Dred Howard would tell the director, and the director would tell us.
If Dred Howard is so smart, why can't he just tell us where they are?
Stone-faced, Iori turned to the tech.
You know Dred Howard is listening to us right now, don't you?
That shut Torrance up for a moment. He crossed his arms over his chest and glanced around, nervously. He looked at Skredsvig.
Dred Howard isn't really listening, is he?
Pay attention to your sonar. Watch for more squid.
For the moment, Skredsvig planned on returning to the freighter because it was the last place he knew to search. During the director's brief before they'd left Heidecker Labs, the director had said that the group was somewhere on the lakeshore. Given how much lakeshore there was, the task seemed impossible. Skredsvig planned to use the shore closest to the sinking freighter as a starting point. Locating those people was still an almost impossible job. Skredsvig tried not to think about that because Issa didn't have much time left. He focused on the hope that one of those people would provide a suitable body for Issa. Like a narcotic haze, dream opened around him like a flower coming into full blossom, and he dropped into it. Skredsvig carried wood into the small cabin he'd found for Issa and him to spend the winter in. The structure was primitive from before Skydark, and had been lived in by traveling men and animals before he'd found it, dug it out, and cleaned it enough for them to shelter in. Together, over the last 2 weeks, he and Issa had made it into a home. They would have to be gone by spring because Ragnar Olsen still had one-eyed ravens out hunting them. But Skredsvig hoped the place would serve them during the cold months.
There you are.
She sat on a small crate in front of the fireplace where a cheery blaze looked at the bottom of the iron pot they'd salvaged from burned-out ruins miles away and weeks ago. Issa had treated the pot like a prize. She looked hale and hearty in the dream, which was what let him know he was dreaming. The aroma of goat stew and wild onions filled the one-room cabin and helped keep out the blowing snow and howling winds that raged outside.
I'm glad you're back.
Skredsvig laid the cut wood on the pile he'd laid aside to keep the fire going through the night.
Me too.
He bent down to kiss her, and his heart swelled the way it always did when he was with her. When he drew back, the withered version of her in the hospital bed sat there, instead of the memory of her.
You have to get to the blind moose.
Broken, Skredsvig's eyes filling with tears, he stared at her.
Issa!
Do you hear me?
Skredsvig tried desperately to wake up. He didn't want to lose his good memories of her to the sickness that was taking her away from him.
Peter!
Her rheumy eyes searched his, and he realized in that moment that if this was all she would ever be, if she could live and be with him, he would be happy with that.
I hear you.
Good. You will go to the blind moose. You'll find the one-eyed man and his fellow travelers there. They are strangers here. He won't trust you, not at first, but a way will be made. Do you understand?
He blinked in confusion, and the world spun around him. This hadn't happened in those days.
No.
You will. Do you trust me?
Yes.
You must join him. He and his companions search for Christy.
Who is that?
The red-headed woman you recovered in the lake. You must help him believe that he must trust you.
Skredsvig didn't know how that would happen. If he was the one-eyed man, he wouldn't trust anyone. When Skredsvig had first arrived, he hadn't trusted anyone. He'd been thrust toward Heidecker Labs because there was nowhere else to go. No one else that could help Issa. He didn't trust anyone now. But here he was, willing to believe in dreams and believe that he could win the confidence of a man who might kill him as soon as he laid his remaining eye on him. Somehow, in this moment, with Issa sitting before him, that didn't seem so impossible.
I'll try.
Good. Because that's the only way you can save me.
The healthy version of Issa smiled at him and handed him the bowl of stew.
Now eat.
Skredsvig took the bowl and spooned up a bite. Just before the stew reached his lips, tentacles reached up from the bowl and caressed his face. Skredsvig woke in the command chair, covered in sweat, his head pounding and breathing much too fast. Ayuri looked back at him over her shoulder.
Are you all right?
Skredsvig concentrated on breathing for a moment and thought about what had just happened. His dreams since his return with the red-headed woman had been more intense.
Stupid dreams.
He rubbed his face and sat up straighter.
Yep. Dreams have been crazy for everyone at the labs lately. Some of the guys in the Psy Labs think it's because Dread Howard is more active right now. Whatever Director Autry is doing has stirred him up. Maybe if we're out of there for a night or two, I can get some better sleep. At least, that's the working hypothesis. I'm getting tired of dreaming about my mother and that whip she made out of my dead father's hair.
What?
I've got scars from the whip I could show you.
Ayuri held up a hand.
Don't ever mention that again. Ever.
Suits me. I don't like talking about it. The way she used to ambush me.
Skredsvig ignored the man and tried to figure out what he was supposed to think about the dream.
How far are we from the Blind Moose?
Kirshner's gaudy house?
Yeah.
The idea felt more right the more he thought about it. He'd been there a few times while tracking squid for the director. Many of the folks in the surrounding villages had strange ideas about the squid, as Torrance had mentioned only moments ago. Occasionally, the director had ordered Skredsvig to bring in dreamers for study. Torrance consulted the charts on a screen he pulled up.
It looks like we can make it to the Blind Moose by nightfall.
Skredsvig considered the dream again. Had it just been a dream? Or had Issa found a way to use the extra Doomy power Dread Howard was generating to contact him? Had she been the one to reach out to him just now? The thought made him feel warm and happy, the way he and Issa had felt in that cabin.
You want to go to a gaudy house?
Torrance raised a hand.
I do. I vote yes. I've got some trade goods I've saved that should pay for a couple nights of total debauchery. I could use some good debauchery.
Skredsvig leaned back in the command seat.
I do.
It's a good idea.
When he says something like that, you know it's not a good idea.
Why not? A lot of travelers go through the Blind Moose. If the people we're hunting are in the area, they would probably go there. And if they've already been through there, maybe someone there will know something about where they're heading.
Maybe.
Plot a course there. Let's see what we find.
Changing course now.
The mini-sub rolled on its axis slightly as Hayori accelerated. Head swimming with sickening intensity, Christy raised her head and opened her eyes. The director stood before her and thumped a hypodermic syringe with a forefinger. Pale green liquid showed inside the hypodermic's barrel.
Are you back? You can't simply fall unconscious every time you want to.
Actually, meditation and distancing herself from the physical world had been part of Christy's training in Harmonyville.
In fact, after I give you this, you'll stay awake until you're screaming for me to take you out of that body.
Christy said nothing and conserved her strength. She searched for Dread Howard, but the squid was gone. Had the creature coiled up in himself for protection from Director Autry's attacks? Christy was certain that if Dread Howard could do that, he would get it done. The squid was desperate, though. No matter how much he tried to hide it, that emotion vibrated within his presence in her mind.
This is a mixture of modafinil and sodium oxybate. It will amplify the sensory input that cycles through your nerves. Lights will be brighter, sounds will be louder, if not deafening. Anything that touches you will feel like sandpaper. Your sense of taste and smell will be enhanced as well. You're going to become extremely uncomfortable in your own skin. In time, will surrender.
Christy sagged against her restraints and marshaled her reserves. Director Autry crossed over to her, jabbed the hypodermic needle into her neck, and pressed the plunger to inject the chems. Almost instantly, the harsh burn of the solution created stringers of fire throughout her body, touched all the bits of agony within her, and knitted them into a web. She felt like she was being cooked from the inside out.